Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another week here at the Damage Report with me, Johnny Rolla, fresh off a three-day weekend. So I am mildly more awake and feel like I don't know how to do this. It's been 3 days. I don't remember how any of this works. You know, we did bring a professional, though, who hopefully will remind me. Francesca Fiorentini, how's it going?
What's going on? Hi. Guten Morgen.
Exactly. Guten Morgen to you as well. Great to have you here.
I'm so glad that the holiday was on a Friday and not a Monday because, like, you know what I'm saying? Franny over Brett, right?
Exactly. Screw that guy. He actually appeared on Wednesday when JR couldn't show up. So he still appeared. Sorry. But you had another episode of The Bituation Room on Sunday. Any highlights you want to plug to get people fired up for that?
Yeah, we're talking about nationalizing the American oil supply so that we can dismantle it and survive climate chaos.
But if we didn't have oil, how would we have energy? There's nothing else to invest in, so we probably shouldn't try.
There's a burning star in the sky right now.
I know.
Don't look directly at it.
Unless you're Trump. Yeah. Yeah, of all the things that are, like, so stupid that I don't even want to be an actual part of civilization, it's that, like, we're getting blasted by an unlimited source of energy, and all we have to do is invest in it, and we're like, eh, maybe, I don't know.
It's too obvious. It's not innovative enough. We realize that, right? Anyway, the Bituation Room podcast, listen to it. John was on last week. He was great, if you haven't heard that.
Thank you.
But yes, and our new episode is all about the Green New Deal. Listen to that one. And also Trump's fireworks display.
Yeah. But you don't have to worry about fires because it's just stone.
Yeah. Surrounded by dry forest.
Oh, God, the world is too stupid. But we still need to eat, so I can't flee from it yet. Anyway, thank you to everybody who's already joined us here watching the show. Please hit the like button if you haven't. And some of you haven't. You know who you are, so please do that. You can share the stream if you want. You can chat along. You can send Twitch comments. You can hashtag TDR Live tweet us. You can send in super chats, and we'll respond to those as we go on. And we have a number of awesome stories that I have a feeling are going to get you fired up. Just a couple of quick things I want to mention to give people a little bit more time in case their notifications didn't go out. Before we jump into the big stories of the day, I just wanted to briefly mention a few things that I thought were funny, and it'll also give me an opportunity to fix the lack of formatting I did for our graphics. Hopefully I'll be able to fix that. But do you see this? So Trump has been sending out these Facebook ads saying he'll stand to support our statues. He said, we will protect this. See, Francesca is worldly enough that I think she gets the joke there.
I'm worldly or cosmopolitan, as Stephen Miller says. No, that doesn't have anti-Semitic undertones or overtones.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't.
Yeah, that right there, that's not in the United States.
No, it's not. It's not. It's great. But look, if any Antifa are watching this, you can't just go to, like, Indianapolis to tear down that statue. You have to go to Brazil.
Although, if we so put stupid. The call out that someone was going to tear down that statue, you will see a lot of right-wing militia booking flights to Argentina.
Exactly. Well, and what I thought was funny about this was someone pointed out, it's like, you know, over 130,000 Americans have died from COVID, and Trump doesn't want to talk about that. So he distracts us by talking about statues, and in so doing, accidentally identifies a statue in Brazil, which is the country that is second worst flubbing the response to coronavirus, partially because they have a right-wing fascist leader who doesn't want to actually deal with the pandemic. Hey, we're alike after all.
Yeah, so that's Christ the Redeemer right there.
Mm-hmm. Christ the Redeemer. It's a great statue, by the way.
Yeah, and he's not necessarily white or brown.
No, no. Anyway, it's just so ridiculous that, like, anyway, go on my Twitter. I put up a Photoshopped version of it that I think is pretty good, and then other people in the response did even better. So go check my Twitter, and you'll see that recently. One other bit of quick news that we normally would have done as a full story, but we're not going to now, is you might have seen the news last Friday that Kimberly Guilfoyle, who is dating Don Jr., is positive for coronavirus. Now, that is a problem for a number of people, partially because she's been going to all these campaign events, and of course she doesn't wear a mask because she is the sort of person who would date Don Jr. But also, I don't know if we covered this last week, her and Don Jr. went to a maskless Hamptons party. It was like 100 people, none wearing masks, to sort of protest the paranoia. And now the attendees at that party are apparently freaking out because they had never considered the possibility that they could be exposed to coronavirus, which now they might have been.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Melted Melania Trump sees her day after dating one too many greaseballs. she was with Governor Gavin Newsom before this.
Yes.
Yeah. And the other thing, and just to like, just for everyone who's out there who, you know, I know a lot of people who are watching the show take it seriously. She was asymptomatic. Yeah.
Yeah.
She was asymptomatic and she got it. And it was like, it was a little bit like, I don't know. Yeah. That's why this virus is scarier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But oh my God, any sympathy for the people in the Hamptons though? None.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
I mean, they knew it's like they were, you know, a hop and a skip away from the worst hot zone for this virus. And a couple of months go by and they pretend that it's all fine. But when I see that, like that now they're like surprised, like, oh my God, a friend who works, Mary, who's one of the editors at TYT, she sent me this video, and it's of this Russian astronaut talking about the experience of being in orbit. And he says the thing that, like, all astronauts say, which is, you know, when I saw the Earth and I looked down on it and there are no borders between countries, I suddenly realized how ridiculous and artificial the divisions are between us and about how small our fake issues that we hype up between each other are. And I responded to her at the time, you know, it's one of the worst failings of our species is that we can't learn from other people's experience. And I sort of get, like...
You mean the American species?
Well, all humans, but yeah, perhaps especially Americans. And, you know, it's difficult to put yourself in the, you know, the big space boots of an astronaut and imagine what that would be like. But, like, you could put yourself in the position of someone who has COVID or knows someone who does. You could learn that much, I think. But even the people that we're supposed to look up to as the elites, these like rich people in media and politics, this is like the first family. They can't or won't do that. Even the smallest little bit to avoid not just her getting, you know, a potentially fatal disease, and apparently she's going to be fine, but she might well have exposed people to it at multiple different events because of her willful ignorance, choosing
her gilful—that's
why you're a comedian.
Gilful
ignorance, choosing not to wear a mask, which does not just endanger her, endangers everyone else around her, and she chose to do that, and Don Jr. chose to do that. Man, our species really sucks sometimes.
I mean, yeah, I think just the Trump species. I honestly, John. Ignorance is the brand, okay? Mm-hmm. That is the brand. She cannot wear a mask because you're supposed to project arrogance and ignorance. Like,
yeah.
This is America is being so stupid that you won't take the basic precautions to save your life.
Yeah.
That's it. That's what exceptionalism is. And we all know that's not true. But that's what it is. So they can't be seen wearing masks and they won't wear masks.
You're 100% right.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Over the past few days, Donald Trump had his big Mount Rushmore speech where he went with a whole bunch of people, even though he was asked not to, and they had fireworks, even though they were asked not to, and many of them didn't wear masks, even though they were asked to. But what did happen at the event was that Donald Trump made clear his campaign strategy going forward. It's not going to be about the pandemic. It's not going to be about his second term. He seems to have no idea what that's going to be like. It's about the culture war, and specifically racializing the culture war. So I want to give you a couple of the quotes from the speech. You have this: angry mobs are trying to tear down statues of our founders, deface our most sacred memorials, and unleash a wave of violent crime in our cities. So the protests that are going on about police brutality and reform of the police, no, it is a wave of violent crime meant to deface that which is sacred. So that's your appetizer, Francesca, to give you an idea of how he's going to react.
He says on sacred Lakota territory, just in terms of defacing what's sacred, right in front of Mount Rushmore, which was etched, carved into the Black Hills, violating a treaty with Native Americans. But please, no, continue.
Yeah, and so I'm glad that you pointed it out, because this really feels like another Tulsa moment where, like, you'd have to be so ignorant to not get the obvious juxtaposition there that it seems purposeful at that point.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is.
Anyway, he goes on to say, make no mistake, this left-wing cultural revolution is designed to overthrow the American Revolution. Yeah, if there's one thing leftists want, it's a monarch again. And Britain. I don't know. And
Boris, take us back, please.
So that's Trump. Ted Cruz tweeted something effectively the same thing. It's that the radical left wing is like taking over. This is their coup. And everyone, including Representative AOC, pointed out, like, why do we choose Biden then? Like, if the Dems are bowing down to the radical left, then Biden, he's like the most moderate of all of the candidates that were running, other than maybe Klobuchar. I don't know. Seems like a weird thing. But anyway, he goes on to say, they think the American people are weak and soft and submissive. No, dude, just you. But no, the American people are strong and proud, and they will not allow our country and all of its values, history, and culture to be taken from them. So all of this is just statue, 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 KKK memorial, KKK memorial, KKK memorial. It's just that. The whole speech effectively was, I'm going to protect the traitors and the racists that still have statues standing. That's it.
I'm going to protect the losers. Mm-hmm. Like, I will be in November. All right? I am a loser. There will be no statue to him. We're done with that. Confederates lost, man. They lost on a BS premise on top of that. Not only that, they fought for something terrible. Mm-hmm. And we're still fighting these wars, and we're still fighting part of the Civil War now. So, I mean, yeah, it makes sense that this is his strategy, of course, because he is the last gasp of white male straight supremacy, wealthy supremacy. He's the last gasp. I mean, we all know just a fraction of the things, if any other president had done them, how immediately they would have been impeached. I mean, this last week, right, you know, I think a lot of mainstream outlets talked about this, and that's fair. But I mean, just imagine what would have happened if Obama had ignored intelligence that Russia had put bounties on American soldiers. Like, what? Over, gone, you know? But we have such a weak opposition. We have such a weak Democratic Party, and we're relying so much on November. You know, it is actually really frustrating. But I will say, it's all he's got left, yo, John. Yeah. He doesn't have the economy left, so this is all he's got left.
That's true. I mean, they made their play. Or, like, ignore the pandemic, and maybe the economy will come back, and, you know, a bunch of people die. But don't worry about that. Just the economy will come back. But that's not actually how it works. Those things are actually related. And you're right. You pointed out that. Like, but also, you know, we had, I think it was Joni Ernst was on, I think, Fox News over the weekend. And she was asked, she was like, you called Obama a failed leader because two people died from Ebola. well, you know, what is it, 65,000 times as many people have died from coronavirus, so is that failed leadership? No, I think the president is stepping forward, she said. Like, I didn't even choose to play it, but I did think of it because it's just, yeah, he can do literally anything he wants. Like, policy, in terms of expectations for what the government is actually going to do or protect you from, all of that, there isn't anything anymore. You don't hear Trump fans saying, here's what I want Trump to do. I want him to deliver on Medicare, or I want him to, like, not even taxes, even the financial stuff from his base. There's no expectations. There's no desire or policy wishes. There's just punch him in the face, make him cry, make me not feel as bad for being a racist as I do right now. It is all white identity politics. That's all that's left.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And I just want to say, like, to any Trump voters, if you know Trump voters, you could reach out to them and just be like, hey, bro, you know, you could still be racist without the president. Like, you don't need him to support your dumb ideology. And they will be. So, like, let's all remember, of course, that no matter what happens in November, racism and white supremacy will still be around, even more so, because they'll all think that, you know, if Trump loses, you know, he'll be a martyr in their eyes. Mm-hmm. But also at the same time, it's like, as Democrats or as progressives, we have to remember that just getting him out is obviously not the only solution.
Yeah.
And for Trump voters, it's like, bruh, you could hitch your, you know, white supremacist horse to another wagon. You just choose not to. Like, mm-hmm. Joni Ernst, like, you just choose to go down with this ship. The entire Republican Party is going down with this ship. You know, you wonder what comes next.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I've seen a lot of articles say is coming next is Tucker Carlson 2024. Where he, well, that's why I disagree with you that it's the last gasp of, like, white mediocre racism. Tucker Carlson, that's his brand. And all he has to do is keep demagoguing about race. And in, you know, 2022, in the spring, you know, when they start to run, all the candidates are coming out, he will announce that he was Q the whole time. And every Republican will love him. And by the way, why shouldn't he? How would anyone prove he isn't?
No, exactly.
Doesn't matter. He'll just say yes. So
I don't know if Q uses that much bronzer.
That's a good point. So in terms of Trump's strategy, a focus on race, we have a great example of this this morning with him saying, has Bubba Wallace, you know, the only black NASCAR driver, apologized to all of those great NASCAR drivers and officials who came to his aid, stood by his side, and were willing to sacrifice everything for him, only to find out that the whole thing was just another hoax. That end flag decision has caused lowest ratings ever. I have no idea if that's true. Neither does Trump. He's just saying it. But there he is saying that Bubba Wallace, who was told by NASCAR that there was a noose in the garage that he was in, that he is a hoaxer, and that he screwed over NASCAR. None of this makes any sense, but it doesn't matter. It is the message that's being sent is that the only black driver for NASCAR thought, because of what NASCAR told him, that he was being the target of a hate crime. And so Trump is choosing to attack that one black driver and say that the flag should come back. None of this means anything except I will attack black people for you and protect your racist icons. That's all it is.
Absolutely. And punish anyone. I mean, you're blaming, I mean, the way that Trump always does, right? He blames the black community. He blames the Latino community for their own problems. And it's, I mean, it's worked out for conservatives and for a really, really, really long time to blame historically oppressed communities for their own issues, not offer any kind of universal services, blame them for needing things like food stamps, Medicaid, et cetera, and then lifting up any person of color who throws their entire community under the bus, i.e. Candace Owens, right? Mm-hmm. Like that is And that, I think, is one of the more disgusting parts about conservatism is that they embrace diversity in the most cynical and the most just the most cynical and the most dehumanizing way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And one of the reasons that this sort of strategy can work is because even the most responsible media outlets won't be honest about what's actually happening. So what you just saw is summed up by the New York Times as Trump defends Confederate flag in latest race-based appeal to white voters. It's race-based. I mean, they're identifying that's about race. That's better than they would have done 3 years ago. But it isn't racist. Let's not go crazy. It's race-based. You know, like when you burn a cross, it's race-based exterior decorating. That's all it is. It's not a hate crime or anything.
It's a race-based arson.
Exactly. It's ridiculous. Yeah. But it's sometimes even more explicit. He's multiple times in the past few days called Black Lives Matter a symbol of hate as he digs in on race, according to CNN. You know, like a cross might when you mount it in someone's lawn. They're just digging in. It's not racist. Now, obviously, a rational person seeing this knows what it is. But I love that even at this point, CNN and New York Times are like, well, you know, we'll dip our toe. We're not going to like really identifying what's going on here.
No, but it legitimizes it too, right? It's like when you say digs in on race, what does that even mean? Like truly, what does that mean? Like, no, he is, you know, acting out his racism and calling to his white supremacist and racist base. Just say that. Don't say digs in on race as if that were a legitimate issue, like, you know, I don't know, the infrastructure of the US or like healthcare. Like it's not, that's not an issue. It's not an actual thing you can like dig in on.
Yeah, he's just digging in.
I know. Just call it what you're calling it, which is white identity politics, which is exactly, you can easily say white identity politics. But no. Whenever the media talks about identity politics and whenever oftentimes we mistakenly think about it, we only think about people of color or gay people or women, whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, but no. It never applies to white people or white men, especially.
Yeah. And if you want to primer on what it looks like, watch literally any episode of Tucker Carlson's show, and that's all it is. White Identity Politics 101. That's
Can I just say really quickly that the New York Times did a great piece about, you know, a fake statue toppling, right? And that a bunch of white militias showed up to this statue. And I can't remember where it was again, if you remember where that... Anyway, so they all show up to this statue, and the article is about the fake call for toppling this statue, right? It's the idea that they couldn't find who posted it. It was some Facebook group that was like left agenda or something like that, and they didn't really know, and it turned out that it seemed like the person was fake and the post was fake. It doesn't matter because hundreds of armed militia showed up to protect this statue, and I think it was like a Columbus statue. And that wasn't the story. Think about that, you guys. Like, the fact that who cares if it was a fake post, if it was a real post? We know that there are trolls. We know that there are whomever operatives. We know that's a tactic. Yeah. The real story is that hundreds of armed white militias showed up to try to protect the statue, and they ended up harassing a person who had a Black Lives Matter shirt on. I believe he was white, because otherwise something worse might have happened.
Yeah.
But so just to put that into context, the real problem is not a fake media account. The real problem is that these militias are being allowed to foster.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's the if it's like with the Republican war on voting rights, effectively, if one side is going to have an all out campaign against something and the other side won't even acknowledge that that's what's happening, how are you going to stop them from winning that war? Stopping as many people as possible from voting and maintaining the, you know, lock grip, the chokehold of white supremacy over every facet of American society, government, economy, everything. And that's what we have right now. So this morning, when Donald Trump tweets an attack that makes no sense whatsoever against Bubba Wallace, here is how his spokesperson defends the questions about it.
So NASCAR, I would note, their statement says that this garage pool rope was there since last fall, since far before the teams arrived at these garages. They also said definitively, as the FBI investigation determined it, that there was no hate crime versus Bubba committed. What the president is making is a broader point that this rush to judgment on the facts before the facts are out is not acceptable. And we saw it with the Covington kids, and we saw it with Jussie Smollett, and now we saw it in this case before
but
the
Kaylee,
FBI
hold
came
on,
to that conclusion.
People are going to quickly point out that that's that that comparison is not fair. To call this a hoax when he stands by that he truly believes that that's what it was.
Right. Well, the Federal Bureau of Investigation does not stand by that assessment. The president's merely pointing out that we've got to let facts come out before we rush to judgments.
Okay. So what you have there is the president saying it's a hoax, and he blames Bubba Wallace when Bubba Wallace had literally nothing to do with this becoming a story. He was warned about this. And we're just going to show the image again. I don't care if it was being used as a pull rope. It is a noose. There has never been a more noosey noose than that noose. Okay? He didn't bring it up. It is a noose. Maybe it's been there for a long time, and that means it wasn't a specific hate crime targeted at Bubba Wallace. But a noose casually just being there, not targeted at a person, but we just wanted to have a noose around, maybe is better a little bit. Still disturbing, and the issue there is not Bubba Wallace.
No, no, and this is the thing, is that NASCAR is trying to de-escalate a situation that clearly at first glance is really scary, and of course was scary for Bubba Wallace, and I'm sure the people who alerted him to it for his safety, they did an investigation, that's great, and then the facts came out, end of story. It would have been scary if it had deliberately been put there for him. It doesn't appear like it was. End of story. Your job as the president is to de-escalate that whole situation, like NASCAR, which, man, I can't believe I'm holding up NASCAR as an example, which as of a few months ago allowed the Confederate flag to fly very high. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. We know what he's gaming at. We know what he's playing at. Meanwhile, hundreds of thousands of people have died over a virus that he has refused to even issue the most minimal order, like masks, mask wearing nationally.
Yeah.
Come on. What are you actually, what hill are you dying on right now?
The hill of absolute BS racist attacks, and Kayleigh McEnany is dying right next to him on that hill. The entire thing just so, what a weird year that, like, on race, can we just be a little bit more like NASCAR? And then like, on public health, could we be more like the Insane Clown Posse who canceled their concerts almost immediately when this thing started? Could we be more like NASCAR and ICP? I don't know what the WWF has done. Sorry, E. I'm sure they're being good in some ways because everything's topsy-turvy in 2020. One of two protesters that were struck by a car in Seattle over the weekend has since died from the injuries. She was killed by someone who broke through a barricade and purposefully drove on a highway that had been shut down. We don't understand anything more about the motivations, but we do understand that. The protesters had been on the highway for a little over an hour when a white car drove southbound through a blockade toward the protesters at a described high rate of speed, striking two victims. The driver continued southbound for over a mile before stopping. The one who died, Summer Taylor, had apparently has been described as spending the last 4 to 6 weeks tirelessly standing up for others while working full-time and supporting everyone around them. Summer had been working at Urban Animal, a veterinary clinic, and had been participating in protests week after week after week. She passed away from her injuries, tragically. A description from Kenna Camacho of Summer saying, "They were always the first one to call people out for being sexist, racist, standing up for queer and trans people, basically anyone who needed to be stood up for. They were the ones there that were so vocal." And Summer died, you know, doing that. The other individual who was struck, Diaz Love, was hospitalized in serious condition and hopefully we'll pull through. But this is just the latest in, we can't say for sure, we don't know that it was intentional, but these protesters have been targeted by people with cars, both random civilians, cops. It has been a recurring thing since the beginning of these protests.
Yeah, my heart goes out to Summer's family and her friends or their friends and everyone who has been active in Seattle as the president and his lackeys have been celebrating the quote unquote liberation of Seattle as police moved in on the free zone there. I mean, this is the thing, like, you know, we talked about all the race baiting and coming from the White House, and then you see it play out, you know, when you listen to this much poison from the president, from Fox News, what is the difference between this kind of speech and the kinds of videos that ISIS puts out about who they should target and why. Mm-hmm. And look at the tactic. The tactic is the same. So if this person were Muslim and the target was white and Christian, we would call this an act of terrorism. That is what it is. This is white terrorism. All right. It is. And I don't know if the driver was white, but it is absolutely based on ideology that the Black Lives Matter movement is somehow a hate group or somehow should be targeted.
Yeah, the driver was black. We don't know much about the driver. We do know that the driver was black. The only information I was able to find was that the sobriety test apparently showed that the driver wasn't under the influence. While in custody, the authorities described him as being reserved and sullen and said that he had asked about the victims. Okay, again, don't know exactly why, but we do know that we have seen this over and over again, and here's one thing coming out of it. State Patrol announced on Twitter on Saturday night that protesters would no longer be allowed on Interstate 5, quote, for the safety of all citizens, including protesters and motorists.
Yeah, that's
so
awful.
Someone breaks through a barricade, kills someone, and effectively, the protesters are punished for it. That they won't be able to do these protests anymore, which is what the cops have wanted this entire time. So it becomes sort of convenient that when they are targeted with violence, suddenly, the aims of people who oppose the protesters are being advanced. Hypothetically, they could put up more effective barricades. They could stand there.
They could be there protecting protesters, right? I mean, we've talked about this, but it's like, visit other countries around the world. What happens when there are large-scale demonstrations is that a lot of them don't have to provide their own security. The law enforcement in wherever you are will be the security. They'll protect your right to free speech. So yeah, put a few. How many cops do you think you'd have to put to protect some protesters? Mm-hmm. One, two, anything to prevent a crazed person from driving through a barricade and killing people?
Yeah. And by the way, Danny sends in a super chat saying Summer's pronouns were they, them. I apologize. I was trying to use those pronouns. If I did not, I apologize. No slight was intended. But I apologize. Both Summer and Diaz Love use they, them as pronouns. So let's just understand that. But anyway, just, tragedy. And one that, again, because of this particular sort of, like, using your car as a weapon is not new in this area. The idea that the protesters would be punished for this, I just find absolutely insane.
Yeah, I mean, only a few weeks ago, the same thing happened in Seattle. Someone tried to drive through a demonstration, right? Like, how many more do we need? Again, put one police officer up there.
Mm-hmm.
Put one.
Yeah.
I challenge you to see if the same thing would happen if you put one police officer, one police car there.
Yeah. Oh, God. Over the weekend, a prominent Broadway actor passed away after a long COVID infection. This is Nick Cordero, known for his roles in Rock of Ages, Waitress, Bullets Over Broadway, and A Bronx Tale, the musical. Died on Sunday after complications from COVID-19 over several months. He was 41. His death was announced on Instagram by his wife, Amanda Klutz. The couple who moved from New York to Los Angeles last year have a one-year-old son, Elvis. Understand, I know some people will see focusing on the death of any one individual as odd, because so many die, even over the weekend where coronavirus deaths have gone down to the lowest they've been at for months. It was still hundreds of individuals have died. Mm-hmm. But one reason, look, any individual death is itself a tragedy, but one reason I think that people need to see this is people have, even after all that we've been through, such a weird idea of what coronavirus is like, what being infected by it is like. They have been convinced by the media and by Trump that 99% are nothing. The cases don't matter at all. You're fine. Or you die. And you die. And you only die because you were 90. That's it. And that's not at all what it was actually like. Nick Cordero was 41. Was apparently in very good health initially. Was hospitalized originally back in March of this year. Throughout his stay in the hospital, he underwent a leg amputation, was given a temporary pacemaker, and was put into a medically induced coma. He'd been in the intensive care unit for more than 90 days and suffered from additional complications like lung infections and septic shock. And along the way, the wife that we mentioned earlier, Amanda Klutz, had given updates and had some encouraging news that back on April 24th, this is months ago, had two negative COVID-19 tests. Months wow. ago. And at some point came out of the coma as well. She said the virus was apparently out of his system. This is, again, months ago. But this
41-year-old... He had negative tests.
Exactly. After having had it, then was out of his system, but still suffered months of complications that eventually resulted in his death. And even if he had pulled through, would have been permanently affected for the rest of his life by it. The amputation, the lingering issues with internal organs and all that. And that is an experience that many people have that is not talked about. That this is not just a thing where the vast majority of people don't experience anything. And even those who do, very few of them die. No, people are maimed for the rest of their lives. Yes. And they're not just older. That would be a tragedy enough by itself. This guy was 41 and died as a result of this disease. So I think that in a lot of ways, this case shows how serious this is in ways that people don't often acknowledge.
Absolutely. I mean, I wanted to ask people on my Instagram, just like, who's suffered from COVID? Who knows anyone? And in just 24 hours, I got 60 responses. And these are people you won't see on the news, but everyone who had themselves gotten COVID and had a fever for 10 days, have like permanent lung stuff going on now. It was really touch and go. They were scared. Or whose family members or whose husbands and fathers and aunts or cousins passed away or were hospitalized, or just, you know, didn't look like they would make it and then actually did make it. But like, it has touched so many people. Just ask around. We don't talk about it enough. We don't talk about healthcare enough, to be honest with you. So we're sort of meant to suffer in silence. We're meant to suffer alone. You know, it's like when we treat people when they're sick, you know, okay, just go away and deal with it. Don't talk to me about it. Let's not do that. You know, that's what our, you know, president is doing, if we can call him that. Let's be better than that and reach out to one another and inform one another about what's going on and try to help where we can. And I mean, this guy had Broadway lungs, you guys. Do you know what it takes to have Broadway lungs?
I don't.
How good you have to sing? You know how good?
Don't.
You know how much air you got to hold in there? And he was, you know, and he still passed away.
Yeah. Yeah, just devastating. And I know, you know, well, there's so many tributes online. And then I just think about, like, how many days in a row did we have 750 deaths on average? And people had moved on. We're like, nah, it's not 2,500 anymore, so I don't care. And you know what? For weeks, it was like 500 to 700. And I looked recently for a photo of 500 people. And I found one of a theater that supposedly had about 500 people in it. And it is a massive number of people, a massive number of families and networks of friends and coworkers and all of that. And every one of these is a tragedy. And there are so many of them. So many. 200 is a lot. I mean, and the idea that everybody's just spiking the football literally every day, even as the numbers of cases go up and, you know, people are being hospitalized and again are being maimed. And it's to the point where I'm not even doing this as a full story, but over the weekend, a story came out that the White House is writing their new message for the country on coronavirus. And it is, we need to live with it. Which isn't just stupid and a surrender and below the dignity of the White House or whatever. It's also stupid messaging because a lot of us can't live with it because it kills us. And it's killing hundreds of people literally every day. All sorts of people. Older people, young people, those with pre-existing conditions, those without. It is killing people. We can't live with it. And the idea that the White House is just going to admit that they are done, that they give up, is amazing.
Yeah, no, it should be. We need to give up on preventing unnecessary death. We need to live with looking the other way when our loved ones die and we're not able to be by their side.
That's it.
And if it happens to you, too bad. Everyone else is going to look the other way and live with it. We are a failed country, man. Honestly, at this point, look at us. We are what? Twice as many deaths as the next greatest death country with death toll, like in Brazil, I think. Twice as many deaths, you guys. This is not rocket scientist. Every science. There we go. Coffee's kicking in.
Neither of us are rocket scientists.
Okay. I didn't take trigonometry. The point is that every other country has gotten this right. You don't need to be that smart to stay inside, to issue a national federal order for people to wear masks, for people to stay inside, to not open things up. And, you know, we love to get down on Trump, but then we laud people like Cuomo or like Newsom. No, Cuomo and Newsom have also not done a great job. I mean, especially over in California, our cases are on the rise again with no signs really of slowing down. We're trying to close things that we reopened prematurely. And all of this goes to show and is the reason why not only do we need Medicare for all, but we need an economic plan that can help people stay at home. Because right now, workers are being given a choice between life and death, and that is absolutely not fair. And we can do better by them.
Yeah.
And yeah, change the tax code. I don't know. Do whatever you have to do. Make Elon and Bezos finally cough it up. Pay up, man.
Especially
Elon. Especially Elon. But seriously, that's where we're at right now. And so it is a frustrating point, and it is you cannot make the comparison with any other country because we are an outlier because of our ignorance and our arrogance, which again is the brand of this ridiculous administration that we have.
Yeah. Not just arrogance and ignorance. Arrogance. Yeah. That's what we have. That's our burn or ignorance.
It's Nyans.
One of the two. Steve Ducey is one of the personalities on Fox News that has thankfully been advocating for mask use. And I've given him credit for that last week. But he did say something over the weekend that I found interesting, that mask wearing has become a sort of partisan thing. And he doesn't seem to understand why.
For some reason, over the last couple of weeks, a month, masks have become political. But the science of masks is not. How do they work?
Yeah, so it's important to just understand and follow the facts and the data. Here's what we do know. We know that wearing a facial cloth covering or a mask can reduce the transmission of this virus from 17% down to 3%. Well, what does that mean? That equates to saving about 35,000 lives over the next 3 months.
Wow.
So the data and the science shows that it works. You're not only protecting yourself, but you're also protecting others.
Okay, so again, credit to Steve Ducey for having this doctor on. The doctor lays out how many lives can be saved from wearing masks. That is important, especially because Steve Ducey is the host of the most influential news show in the history of mankind. That's a different conversation. That's also very sad, but credit to him. However, when he says it's become political, wow. He just have no idea how? He doesn't have a theory, a hypothesis, nothing? He's not working on anything?
Yeah, and while we're at it, you know, all this Hillary Clinton hate, where did that come from? Wow, we really, you know, she had pneumonia, she's sick, she is the devil, she smells like sulfur. Ah, so unnecessary. I would almost venture to say it's a little sexist.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Ducey's getting woke, y'all.
Yeah, he's waking up late. He hit the snooze a few times. But anyway, so look, again, credit to Ducey, but especially because Ducey's been doing the right thing. Ducey and recently people like Sean Hannity are saying to wear masks. I want to do Ducey a favor, and he's not sure why it became political, so I want to help fill him in a little bit. So look around you at the place you're in and the people you've chosen to work with. People like Laura Ingraham, who's a really interesting case, because Laura Ingraham herself spent late March and early April talking up the benefits of widespread mask use. She really did. On her show, on Twitter, multiple times she portrayed them as an alternative to stay-at-home orders that would help get people back to work. She even showed people videos on how they could make their own cloth masks. She offered a series of new protocols that would be used until this virus burns out, including that everyone within 6 feet of others must wear masks in the workplace. And so all of that sounds good. But something changed at some point, and it was around the time that she started saying things like this. This was on, I believe it was in late April or early May. They want you masked, not just during the virus, but until the end of time. Because remember, there will always be another potential virus lurking out there around the corner. She said things like that many times. So it went from her advocating for masks to help the economy reopen to, well, suddenly it's a plot. They'll always want you masked. It's not about the virus. It's about the Constitution and trampling on your tree of blood, Snake.
The Masked Singer? That was just the beginning. Underneath the bunny is George Soros.
Exactly. And that's what she did. And now, I mean, that starts questioning the science itself and stuff like that. You had people like Britt Hume who were like mocking Biden for wearing a mask, saying, for instance, that he looks ridiculous. And that's why much of the public doesn't want to don a face covering. Let's say that that's true. Let's say that it looks ridiculous and that's why people don't want to. Maybe using your media platform to mock people for wearing masks pushes people in the wrong direction on that then. If you know that they're already susceptible to being worried about how it looks, maybe don't encourage them to think it looks ridiculous. But that's what he did. Tucker Carlson said this, "It's like a bioweapon, the mask. But then you're required to put that same terrifyingly dangerous face mask over your nose and mouth. And you're required to do this by law. Good luck, Los Angeles. You don't deserve this." And so, like Laura Ingraham, at times, especially early on, he did encourage people to wear masks. But eventually, once they had, there was enough conspiracy theorizing and talk about the Tree of Liberty, he and Laura Ingraham, like cowards, started to defer to that, to yes, talking about rights and the fact that it's not fair that they're required to, and is it really constitutional and all of that. I think they're worse than the idiots who were just like, it looks dumb, because they knew the science. They knew masks would help. But they weren't willing to tell their audience something they didn't want to hear. So Laura Ingraham, Tucker Carlson, massive, massive cowards. And their cowardice could have deadly outcomes.
No, they're grifters too. They're just getting paid millions a year to completely grift. I mean, talk about arrogance and ignorance being the brand. That is Fox News. Mm-hmm. And just as they do with race, what they're doing with masks is weaponizing it, and they know exactly who they're speaking to, right? They're not speaking to anyone middle of the road. They're not speaking. They are speaking to the farthest fringe of people who believe that the coronavirus was developed in a Chinese lab by Bill Gates and a gay Teletubby, and they got together. Is that still a thing?
Probably. And
yeah, they got together with Jussie Smollett and they faked a Teletubby noose hanging, and then 5G towers gave us all COVID, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, please come out and vote. Like that's who they want at the ballot. These are the people who they are empowering. Now, I know we think there are a lot of them, but I like to think there's not that many people on the fringe. Like, there are. A lot of people listen to this stuff, but a lot of people consume it like a little bit like it's candy, it's entertainment. But they themselves are wearing masks. Mm-hmm. And they themselves are maybe souring on Trump. And we know that older folks, especially in the Fox News demographic, one foot in the grave, are actually souring on Trump because of his handling of coronavirus.
Maybe. And yeah, you know, that's interesting that you point out that, like, these Fox hosts, even the ones who were attacking masks on air, were still socially distancing, and they were still probably wearing masks when they had to go out, which makes it so interesting to identify the people who weren't. Like, that makes the Kimberly Guilfoyle and Don Jr. thing even more ridiculous. Like, they are so stupid that they didn't even get that the grift is to tell the plebs not to wear it, but protect yourself. They, too, didn't protect themselves.
Right, exactly.
Hope that they're both fine, but ridiculous. We are going out of our way on TDR these past few weeks to give credit to prominent Republicans in politics and media who advise their fans to wear masks, because that's the only way they're going to get through to these people. They don't listen to TDR. They don't care what I think. If I tell them to wear a mask, they're less likely to. So we gave credit last week to Mitch McConnell. And let's see. And Steve Ducey and Sean Hannity and a few others. Well, this week, let's give credit to Jeanine Pirro, who wore a mask and tweeted out the image of her wearing a mask. So, hypothetically, the people who like Jeanine Pirro, mm-hmm, and not just the amazing Cecily Strong impersonation of her on SNL, will be more likely to wear masks. At least, that's what I would hope. Unfortunately, I then went to the replies to that tweet, and Francesca, it was It was not positive. It was things like cloth masks don't protect you. Okay. Let's see. We've got, I refuse to wear a fear mask. No, you're thinking of the mask from Scream, actually. Let's see. We've got this person. Well, I can't. Allergies, asthma, high blood, had a mini stroke, and carry this card. You know, that card that doesn't mean anything and is totally fake and has multiple typos in it.
You mean the card that says I'm actually more at risk for COVID, for dying if I get it? Like, if you've got respiratory problems right now, the thing that's going to save you is the mask. I'm sorry. Oh, I can't even.
Then this. I think she's compromised or kowtowing to the left turn her network has made. She's not the only one. So this is, like, she's being attacked, which, look, considering how awful she's been for a very long time, I get a little bit of schadenfreude out of it. But I want her to do the right thing. And so she is doing this knowing that she's going to get attacked by these crazy people. And they are attacking her. And so more credit to Jeanine Pirro for doing that, knowing the cost. And it makes the people who won't do this on Fox, like the cowards Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham, look even worse by comparison, as they are sort of the last holdouts that are playing that particular grift game.
I hate Jeanine Pirro more than, I don't know, pretty much anyone. I mean, I hate her. She's the most hateful person. She's the worst. She's the most racist. She incites so much violence. I want to reply to that tweet and say, face covering sounds like Sharia law. Because that's, I think, what the old Jeanine Pirro would have said.
Exactly.
And that's what she might say in about 2 or 3 weeks. But also, it is absolutely irresponsible if Fox News is not encouraging their anchors, their staff to wear face masks if they're deployed.
Yeah.
Like that, you know. And so I think she said, I'm traveling, I'm going to be wearing this face mask. Good on her, I guess.
Hey.
I hope you don't get coronavirus.
Francesca?
What?
I am just as uncomfortable as you are, but this is the price I'm willing to pay, is padding Kevin McCarthy on the head or stroking Mitch's shell and saying, good boy, you told people to wear masks. That's what's necessary. Now that we have done our responsible thing, do you want to have fun for just 1 second?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. In terms of schadenfreude, the fact that Jeanine Pirro is wearing a mask, slightly funny. It's not the funniest thing in the image. I don't know if you can see. You probably can't, especially if you're watching on mobile. But do you see in this image what's visible at the bottom? It's her phone. Do you know what is on her phone if you zoom in?
No.
Well, one person noticed, and they noticed because it's a photo of them. It's Chrissy Teigen. And it was a topless photo of Chrissy Teigen that was visible on Jeanine Pirro's phone. She tweeted that at Jeanine Pirro. Why was that on her phone at that particular moment?
Amazing.
And it's totally that image. It was totally that tweet.
Now, that's
look,
great.
It's not, she didn't hack into her phone or anything. Chrissy Teigen tweeted out because Chrissy Teigen's Chrissy Teigen. But why was that on Jeanine Pirro's phone?
I wish she would had, if it was Chrissy in a mask, that would have been even better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it would have been. No, Chrissy couldn't, she was wearing much less than a mask even.
Listen,
anyway.
Left, right, wherever you stand, everybody probably agrees on liking Chrissy Teigen. And especially like that.
She's the best. Anyway.
Let me just say, though, that Chrissy, use your platform. You don't listen to this show. But if someone can get
hey,
to her.
You don't know that.
You don't know that. Use your
you
platform, though. You know, get out. I know how people use it. When Ivanka Trump was following a bunch of celebrities, they were all like, hey, Ivanka, we see you.
That's true. That's
You're
true.
Terrible.
Yeah. I'm going to try to forget that you implied that she doesn't watch her show. She follows me on Twitter. She might watch a show. That's all I'm saying. She probably doesn't. She might.
Oh my God. That's probably great. Are you just in those like DMs being like, hey, Chrissy?
No, I haven't DM'd her.
Hey.
I don't think I have anyway. No, I'm not that stupid.
Hey.
No, I just celebrate solitarily and, you know, don't make a big deal out of it because that's the fastest way to end that thing.
Except you told all of us.
Is this live? Supposedly in 2020. If you're not satisfied with the Republican or Democratic nominee or Howie Hawkins or any of those, you might soon have another person to vote for. With Kanye West tweeting, we must now realize the promise of America by trusting God, unifying our vision, building our future. I am running for president of the United States. Hashtag 2020 vision.
Yep.
So he's running for president. at least insofar as he tweeted about it. So far, there does not appear to be any evidence that he's done anything else that normally you do. And I understand that the past few years have definitely made it seem as if the most important part of being president is tweeting, but there's still hypothetically other things that need to be done to get there. But that's what he said. What do you think? Do you have any thoughts? If you don't, it's cool.
No, I mean, it's just the least surprising thing that's happened this entire year. Like, a pandemic that is out of control that's killed 130,000 people, a generational civil rights movement that has radically transformed this country and helped us reimagine policing. Kanye West announcing that he's running for president? Eh. Mm-hmm. It's not your year, dude. It's not your year. I know that's hard for you to imagine. It's not.
Yeah. It doesn't seem to be. There's a reporter, founding editor of The Appeal, Tennille, says, Kanye West is already too late to make ballot in Texas, New York, and Illinois, has 10 days to collect 130,000 signatures to make it in Florida, and an extra day to collect 12,000 in Michigan. The takes on what it means he'd run for president should probably reflect some of this, and I totally agree. Him running to dominate some of the media, either just as like a self-aggrandizing thing or to boost, I don't know, an album or a shirt or whatever, is one thing. The potential threat of him actually running, we have to take at least seriously enough to identify whether he is actually doing it. And so far, there is no evidence that he is. He hasn't put together, you know, staff or campaign offices or any of the sorts of things that you need to be done. Now, that said, he is very famous, which is apparently all it takes in this country anymore. So hypothetically, maybe people just line up to sign the petition. I don't know.
I just want to see a debate between Trump, Biden, and Kanye and, like, somehow piece a single sentence together through all of that. Like, if you ever want to see, like, the side effects of Cialis play out at the same time, like, that would be that debate. Just, like, nervous, dizzy, megalomaniacal, sweaty, like, you know, mm-hmm. all of that. That would be that debate, is all the side effects at once. I'm excited for that. I also am excited for, look, I don't want Kanye to be president. We should not cover this like it's a real story. Totally. Any media outlet that does a serious interview with him should be burned to the ground with love. But I do think it's funny that like his clothing, his like Yeezy wear is an indication of what kind of government he would run. It's North Korea, you guys. All right. Nothing but tan jumpsuits, boxy as hell. It is. It's just, you know, it's Kanye Jong-un or something.
That's not bad. And the whole thing, like, he loves Donald Trump. He thinks that Donald Trump is literally the best. Why would he run against him? I mean, you fill in the blank. Again, it's not happening. It's so stupid. Everything is so stupid.
Everything's stupid.
God, what a dumb country, what a dumb species. The planet's okay. It's got some cool trees and cliffs and stuff.
I hate all your international viewers. I mean, I love them, but they just rub it in by being so happy, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm okay with the Brazilians because they also have some issues. Russia too. By the way, did you see the constitutional change to that he can stay in until 2036 in Russia? It's a good deal if you can get it. And that they had already printed up the announcements of it and distributed them to bookstores before the vote. Come on, man. We're marginally better. So I'm not even like pointing that out as a comparison.
There's always a second term.
There is. Anyway, what a dumb world. During this pandemic, there has been no shortage of misinformation about COVID-19, treatments that might help, and all of that. And so we want to make sure that here at The Damage Report, you get accurate information. And so joining us now to break down some of the current response to the pandemic and where we go from here is Professor of Medicine at New York Medical College and Chairman of Medicine at St. Joseph University Hospital, Dr. Bob Lajito. Welcome to The Damage Report.
Thanks. Delighted to be with you.
Very glad to have you here. There's a few different topics that we want to touch on, but the first I wanted to bring up was something that gets talked about quite a bit, which is testing. The president often points out that we're doing more testing right now. But I wanted to go a little bit beyond just the surface and talk about, in your evaluation, have the tests become more accurate? And if you could break down the difference between traditional tests and antibody tests, we would love that as well.
Yeah, well, the test that is definitive for this virus is something called a PCR test. And if you Google it, it says polymerase chain reaction. And what that does is it takes the virus, which has a single strand of RNA in it, and it takes the RNA and makes other nucleic acids like DNA and then messenger RNA, if everybody remembers their high school biology, and you get a very specific assay, which is extremely sensitive and very, very specific for the coronavirus. Now, that's important because there are many, many coronavirus species, many of which cause the common cold. So it was important to get COVID-19 pretty specific. That was the test that started back in February and which was very difficult to get results from. So we would send it to the state labs. It would take sometimes 7, sometimes 12, 14 days to get the results back. Now that has been streamlined, and every hospital, every large hospital, and even some medium-sized hospitals have the COVID-19 PCR test on site. And we can do that test and pretty much tell you whether you are actively infected or just have fragments of the virus left over from a previous infection. That's the test that people are lining up for in parking lots and stuff, where the swab goes into your nose, into the nasopharynx, and then you get the actual virus out, which is then put in a container, I call it a module, and that module then does the PCR test quickly. We can run 24 tests an hour in the hospital with the PCR machines doing this very, very sophisticated and very sensitive test. That's not the antibody test. Mm-hmm. The antibody test is measuring a protein which is made by plasma cells in your blood against the virus. Mm-hmm. Now, this is, we hope, we don't know, neutralizing to the virus, which means your adaptive immune system makes these antibodies in recognition to a specific virus, in this case, the COVID virus, and it really looks at the little, I guess there's spikes on the surface of the virus itself, and it makes antibody to those spikes, which are protein. And that's specific for somebody who's been infected, but not who's currently infected. So by that, I mean the only test for that virus right now, antibody-wise, is the IgG, which connotes a long ago infection. Long ago could be 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But for the immune system, that's long ago. Now, we have an IgM and an IgA test that's available commercially in some places, but they're not really FDA up to speed approved yet. Although I'm sending my patients' bloods away, so they get the IgA and the IgM test. The IgM test means that you've been recently infected. So I hope that sort of sums it up. So let me give you the summary of this. So the PCR test is testing for the actual presence of the virus. The antibody test, which we hope is neutralizing, meaning it gets rid of the virus immunologically, is available only in the IgG isotype right now through commercial labs, hospital labs, et cetera.
So you referenced there at the end the possibility that many regular people, laymen, believe that if the antibody test shows that you had previously been infected, that you are now immune to coronavirus. Do we have any reason to believe that that is actually true?
Well, for most viruses, that is the case. Measles, mumps, influenza. But remember that this is one of many coronaviruses, and you know that you can get influenza every year. So that's the concern, that if you have a neutralizing antibody, how long does it last? Does it last a month, 2 months, 6 months? We don't know. The new vaccine is also going to be concerned with that, because we are banking on the fact that when we give you the remnants of the virus or the attenuated or weakened virus as a vaccine, that your immune system is going to make antibody to it, and it's going to be protective. Mm-hmm. However, you and I know, and I think your viewers know, that the common cold, which is a coronavirus, can occur over and over again. You can get a cold in March and then have another cold in June, and that's a corona. So that's our concern. Our concern would be if this virus keeps on giving itself to us. Yeah. And we simply don't know at this point. That's the whole business of developing a vaccine, by the way. The vaccine has got to show that there's protection from this virus. Mm-hmm.
So I certainly understand the fear that you could have been infected, a period of time could go by and you could become reinfected. We don't know for sure. Right. There had been, I remember several months ago, there were some doctors who were saying that there might be reason to believe that there could be sort of spontaneous reemergence of coronavirus, that a person who had previously had it does not appear to have been reinfected externally, but that it had simply reemerged. Is there any reason to believe that, or was that sort of a false lead,
well,
I guess?
That's not false, but the reemergence occurs within days. We have patients we've seen in the hospital who are discharged, who go home after having been in the intensive care unit for a week, and then all of a sudden they come back in the emergency room short of breath and the virus is back. So it's a short period of time. It's not 2 months or 6 months where the virus comes back. This virus likes to replicate within the cells of your lung, et cetera, and it may take a bit for the viral load to increase. Once it's been tamped down, we simply don't know whether it comes back, say, after 6 months or a year. I don't think so. I doubt that. Immunologically speaking, the immune system is sophisticated enough to protect you right off the bat. However, the virus, when it's first infecting you, can reinfect or become worse, I suppose. The viral load increases within 2 or 3 days, and then you can be dreadfully ill again. Then we also have patients that we see in the hospital who get the COVID, do very, very well at home, and then all of a sudden, 5 days after the initial infection, they get very, very sick, wind up in the emergency room, wind up on a ventilator for, say, 5 or 6 days, and then get better. So that's what I think the doctors were meaning. I don't think they meant that this is like 5 months later you get the virus. Okay.
Dr. Lita, one of the things I've been curious about is we had the initial explosion in cases. We now believe that in some states it is spreading once again. And so I've been curious how much was both learned and how much preparation was done between the initial infections in the U.S. and now. Are we much better positioned to treat people? Are, like, I hear about remdesivir. Is that a big game changer? Like, how has the situation developed in terms of our ability to fight a new spread of infections?
These are very good questions. Right now, we're much better prepared. We have several drugs we use right off the bat. We've learned that when you come into the hospital with an acute case of COVID-19, the first thing we do is we thin your blood. We then may have some hospitals use hydroxychloroquine, particularly now since there are reports that hydroxychloroquine may actually be effective on inpatients. We have seen no benefit to hydroxychloroquine, but that may be the fact that our patients are so sick. Hydroxychloroquine is a very minor drug when it comes to the immune system. I use it all the time in my patients with rheumatic diseases. However, we also have tocilizumab, which is a monoclonal antibody that helps control acute inflammation in the lung. We have remdesivir, which is an antiviral agent, which we use routinely. In fact, we put every patient that comes into the hospital and who's in the ICU on remdesivir, which is an antiviral. And then we also use dexamethasone, which is a very potent steroid. The remdesivir, the dexamethasone, the hydroxychloroquine, and I think the tocilizumab are all anti-immune drugs. These are drugs to check the immune system and stop it in its tracks, because it has always been my belief and my observation that patients die not from the virus, but from the immune response to the virus. So that's why these drugs work, and we're really smart about it now, and we know what we're doing. So we haven't had a death from COVID-19 in 3 weeks. And that's really wonderful. We were running 60 patients a day dying at one point. So we're really very happy that we seem to know better as to how to control things. However, there's still the occasional patient who comes in, and despite what you do, and that could be a young person as well. It could be, as you just saw, Nick Cordero, 41 years old, just died, succumbed after months of battling this virus. So it can happen where you can be 20 years old and die of this infection. We simply know, we do not know who will succumb and who will not. And that's the interesting part of the virus. probably has a lot to do with genetics of the immune system in you and your family members, has probably very little to do with the virus, its character, et cetera.
I wanted to ask one more question about remdesivir. We read reports that the U.S. government had, I don't know exactly what it means in practice, but had bought up the entire world's supply. Have you heard of that happening before? Does that indicate, you know, a newfound seriousness that with which they're taking the pandemic? Will that hurt international efforts to fight against the pandemic?
No, I don't think they bought up a huge supply. First of all, many hospitals, inclusive of ours, were doing clinical research with remdesivir. So we had a clinical program where we had remdesivir sent to us. We had several hundred thousand doses sent to us within the state of New Jersey and within the state of New York. And that was divvied up by the health departments of those states based on the actual numbers of infected people that were showing up in emergency rooms and ICUs in different hospitals. So that was the state allotment. That was not something that you bought and paid $3,500 per vial for. That came later. Now, Gilead, the company that makes remdesivir, has been manufacturing copious amounts of it, and it has been readily available for hospitals and for patients. I don't think you can get it outside of the hospital. I don't think anybody would want to buy it outside of the hospital. But I understand from my colleagues that Gilead is providing remdesivir internationally to the WHO and to other countries as it is needed. It's a very sophisticated agent. It seems to work well. It has saved countless lives. So it is a good drug. And that, in addition to the blood thinner and the steroid I mentioned, and also the tocilizumab, the anti-interleukin 6, that's complicated. That interleukin is part of the immune storm that comes on and kills people. All of that together, used wisely with physicians that have experience, will save lives. Much more now than, say, March or February of this year, when we didn't know what we were doing. It was pretty tough.
One other topic I wanted to ask you about was something that is now makes up for, again, layman, a big percentage of the conversation about coronavirus is masks. So you're a doctor. You've presumably worn masks for some time.
I've got one right here.
You do?
Yes, I do. I wear it when I see my patients. Here it is. I have a homemade mask. I also carry in my pocket a cloth mask, which I wear outside the hospital. And I have an N95, which I wear in the units, the wards. This is my cloth mask. I wear this when I'm outside. So yes, masks are extremely important. All the nurses here wear masks. The receptionists wear masks. The patients are stopped at the door and not allowed to come into the clinic until their temperature is taken, and they are not allowed to bring a relative in with them. So it's very important to wear masks. It's basically a gift to your friends. When you wear the mask, you're saying, I'm protecting you from me, and you can protect me from you if you're wearing a mask. And keeping the safe distance is important, unless you have a wife and kids who you know are not infected, or a grandmother and grandfather who you've been with for several weeks. It's best to wear a mask and keep social distancing, and of course, wash your hands. I wash my hands before I see a patient and after I see a patient, while I'm wearing the mask and keeping the social distance.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I've been wondering is we read, especially early on, that there had been a lot of cases of doctors and nurses and other people working in, you know, on the front lines against the pandemic becoming infected with it. There were many deaths, especially early on. Yes. As you've seen this politicization of wearing masks leading to some individuals choosing not to as a sort of political stance, with the possibility that that could lead to future infections, knowing that people like you are the ones who are going to be fighting against a second wave if it comes, what do you think about that becoming this sort of cultural or political thing rather than purely a function of doctors advising us on what we should do to maintain good public health?
Well, public health should never be politicized. Wearing of masks should not be a political statement. And I'm aware of this. I've been told that conservatives don't wear masks and liberals wear masks. And that's baloney. It really shouldn't even enter into the equation. All you have to do is have one person die because a mask wasn't worn in a bar, say, or a clubhouse, or even a gym. I can't imagine being in a gym with everybody grunting and sweating and yelling and spitting, you know, and not wearing a mask on the treadmill or the elliptical or whatever you're on. That to me would be ridiculous. So yeah. This politicization of wearing masks is unacceptable. As far as the medical community is concerned, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I certainly agree. And Dr. Lahida, we really appreciate you joining us and making sure that our audience knows what's actually going on, the updated information. We really do appreciate it.
That's great. And thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.